So I'm delighted today to welcome Monika Mosky-Brodska. sorry about butchering that.
That's good.
Okay, great. So Monika is faculty at Radboud University in the Netherlands. And this year she's also one of our Emmy Noether fellows. So Monika has done important work related to accretion flows and jets and supermassive black holes. And her work has also become even more exciting recently thanks to the results from the EHT. And so today, Monika is going to tell us all about a polarimetric view of black hole accretion flows and jets. Okay, and so Monika, please take it away whenever you're
Okay,
ready.
I will. And so I'm gonna stop my video and share my screen just to avoid all the delays and stuff like that.
Okay, great.
I'm in a countryside. Can you see full screen of this?
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's great.
Okay, so hi everyone. So first of all, thank you very much for invitation, Neil. And yeah, I'm working as Neil said, at Radboud University. This is in Netherlands, in a town called Nijmegen. This is the oldest town in the Netherlands. So if you ever come to Europe and Netherlands, please come and visit Nijmegen. It's basically not Amsterdam, okay, but it's a really nice place. Okay, so today's topic is something that I have been working on for maybe 3 or 4 years. It's kind of becomes a more and more important topic these days, especially in context of Event Horizon Telescope observations. So this work has been done over the last 4 years with many people, and I have a lot of collaborators, 300 something in EHC collaboration, and also outside of the collaboration. And the names are here written on the slide. So I will basically start off with the famous picture that you all have seen. This is a supermassive black hole in the center of M87 galaxy, the giant elliptical galaxy in a Virgo cluster of galaxies at 55 million years away from us. So we are really looking, backward in time. And I'm a member of this collaboration, and I had a pleasure in participating and making this image myself. Sometimes in a group, but sometimes you do these things home alone. And it was just amazing, incredible experience for a scientist. It's like a dream come true almost. You get your hands on, black holes really. And, seeing this picture on your laptop or at home, for the first time ever, it was like you have this thought in your brain, like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, And I also took part in the interpretation of these images. So today, this talk is more oriented about the theory and interpretation of such images and what can we tell more about it. So you see here, it's not just one image. There are four images of M87 core taken at 4 different days. Within like 1 week observations. And the radiation and the fact that it's pretty bright at this observing frequency of 230 gigahertz suggests that we are looking at synchrotron emission, which involves magnetic fields. And, the shape of the ring structure, of this ring-like structure and its size and asymmetry is very suggestive. It strongly suggests that this emission is produced just near the event horizon of a supermassive black hole. And the second motivation for the theoretical studies that I will talk about is, of course, the second, or well, it's not second, it's other prime target of Event Horizon Telescope is Sagittarius A star, the black hole in the center of our galaxy. And this is a really hot topic in astronomy. Obviously, even Nobel Prize Committee acknowledged that this year. And Sagittarius A star is, much lighter in terms of masses, in terms of mass than M87 black hole. It's smaller, so about like 1500 times. But it's also closer to us. So Event Horizon Telescope has the power to resolve it as good as M87 core, maybe even a little bit better. And we don't have EHT images of this black hole yet, but we have other observations that are super cool, in my opinion. So this middle panel here in this plot, I'm showing you 86 gigahertz image of Sagittarius A star. So very close to EHT frequency, and what is striking about it, it's the symmetry. It's kind of roundish, the axial ratio of this blob, Gaussian, I don't know, it's 1.2. And what is important here is the size, okay, here, 100 microarcseconds. So this is really, really small, even for radio astronomy. It's only twice the size of the anticipated size of the event horizon for this black hole, okay? So the black hole shadow is somewhere probably where this region is. And of course, at this frequency, you cannot see it because the source is still obscured by plasma in front of it. So you wouldn't see a shadow anyway, even if you have better resolution. What is this blob really? We're not 100% sure. Maybe some part of accretion disk on a little bit larger scales from the horizon, but it could be also a piece of a jet. But then if that's a jet, then maybe this jet is actually pointing towards us because the symmetry of this image would suggest that, and that would be really funny coincidence, actually. And in all these images of M87 and Sagittarius A star so far, we see synchrotron emission from some sort of accretion flow, which is magnetic. So today I would like to tell you, how we model radiation from these accretion disks and jets around supermassive black holes and what can we learn from that. So M87 and Sagittarius A star represent a class of objects that are called low luminosity active galactic nuclei. They are quite dim in like absolute scale compared to, for example, quasars. It makes easier to model them because we can decouple plasma dynamics from radiation. And the current approach to model accretion disks and jet around them is using this magnetohydrodynamic approach. This is basically standard MHD simulations, magnetohydrodynamic simulations, but they are modified to be done in kerometric, okay? Kerometric here is a fixed background for us, and we can do that because, this disk around Sagittarius and M87, it's really light compared to the mass of the central black hole. So, we don't really have to solve full Einstein equations, really. We can use this approximation. And this plot shows you initial conditions for integrations of fluid dynamics equations. The matter around the black hole is confined into this torus-like structure. This torus is our reservoir of mass to be accreted. And the torus itself is analytic solution for equilibrium fluid configuration in kerometric. And this has been found really long time ago by several groups back in the late 70s. And if we leave it like this around the black hole, it will just basically orbit forever. But we want this gas to fall in. We are seeding the torus with magnetic fields, okay? And the magnetic fields will take it out from equilibrium and make the gas accretion. So the configuration of the field lines is a user choice. And magnetic field configuration is one of those things that we have to guess from either observations or do some smart guess. So in the simplest case, we can just thread it with purely vertical lines and of some weak field and let the simulation go. And here is the movie that shows you evolution of such configuration. It's quite dramatic, actually. And this rotating magnetic fields, because the torus itself is rotating on a Keplerian orbit, the magnetic fields, they are subject to this magnetorotational instability. They bend and turn into turbulence, and this turbulence basically mixes up the gas, and there's some exchange of angular momentum. The gas falls onto the horizon. And at the end, we reach some kind of equilibrium state where there is an accretion disk at the equator and very nicely organized magnetic fields at the black hole poles. And there's also this transition layer here, in between somewhere, between the disk and jet, where a lot of things, interesting things are happening. So let me speed this up here and stop. This green region, actually. And the movie that I'm showing you, actually, it's pretty standard these days. This is axisymmetric models. It's not really impressive. What you ought to be impressed is actually this, something that is on the next slide. Sorry, this one. This is model, a snapshot of a model in full 3D simulations done in collaboration with Agnieszka Janiuk from Warsaw and Maria Felicia De Laurentiis from Italy. And it, this plot shows you basically an equatorial cut. And here you have a polar cut of a model that is very similar to the one that I have just shown you. But this is all, you know, all in 3D. So if you do things in three dimensions, you can see that, you know, there's a lot of asymmetric structures around the black hole. And what is, what you should be impressed here with is the resolution. This is probably one of the highest resolution simulations that we made so far. There are some on CPU codes, there are some GPU codes that can actually reach even higher resolution. So the current simulations are done on this kind of grids that have, you know, 70 million cells, and we can track the turbulence in detail quite well. And the only problem for me, for example, is the visualizations, and very hard to do it on laptop when these files are so large. But ultimately, we want to what we want, not a plasma density like shown here, but we actually want to make those images. And the technique to do that is called ray tracing radiative transfer. So we solve these geodesic equations that you are all familiar with, I'm sure, and we just have to solve radiative transfer along these geodesic lines. And this is the result, one example of the results of a movie. This is a movie or map, synchrotron map of a model. There's a lot of going on in this movie. There's some Doppler boosting, you know, radiation of plasma that is in orbit towards the observer is brighter. There's a light bending that allows us to see what's behind the black hole. There's a lot of variability caused by this turbulent magnetic fields. And you know, that's what you get at the end. And you know, so now if we change the viewing angle of such images and the frequency observations, sometimes, you know, these models sort of look like what we have seen in real sources in M87 or in the upper panels. You know, these images that we saw in M87, they have been predicted by MHC simulations before we even collected the data. And I actually, I think this is really amazing that the source turned out to look very similar to what has been expected. Then, so this seems all very easy now. And you may think, okay, we can take a few models, have, you know, apply different black hole spins and just measure the spin of the objects and we are done, okay? But the answer is no. There are many problems with these models and pictures. So I wanted to say a little bit more about, you know, how large the parameter space is really in these models. So the problem is that, you know, the images of black holes can look very different even for the same MHC models. So the accretion flows that we are studying are very diluted. In principle, they are made of, you know, collisionless, fully ionized plasma. And in principle, electrons can thermally decouple from ions. So this is the larger source of uncertainty here, because, you know, most of the models, these electrons are not even tracked. And here I'm showing you how one snapshot of a single image of a single, you know, simulations can look like for a different prescription of this temperature coupling ratios. That is controlled here by some parameter called beta. Beta measure how strong magnetic fields are compared to the gas pressure, for example. And models can look from, you know, spot-like here on a, you know, on one side of the black hole shadow to some kind of, you know, ring-like structures. But you can also have, you know, more like a crescent-like things. Or, you know, some images look like a euro sign. And there are even images that sort of look like a tick. So they have funny shapes. And yeah, so, you know, in principle, you know, the parameter space is large, because for even a given snapshot of a simulations, we can basically assume whatever we want about this, you know, what electrons are doing, because they are controlled by plasma parameters that we, plasma processes that we don't even resolve in these models. So, you know, there's a, the parameter space is large. This introduces some uncertainty in any measurement of the spin parameter, for example. Okay. What are other parameters in those models, you know, that determine how observed images should look like? Well, the magnetization of the flow, for example. So we sometimes begin with very magnetic fields, but, you know, that's our guess. But in principle, magnetic fields could be much stronger. And the way to measure, you know, the strength of this magnetization is by integrating the magnetic flux at the horizon. The magnetization at the horizon that is just basically an integral of B over the surface of the black hole does not only control the power of this jet that is formed, but also, you know, it controls the dynamics of accretion disk near the horizon. So, for example, you can see these different plots here of a disk. This is equatorial cut of the disk for falling onto the black hole in the presence of a jet that has, you know, stronger and stronger magnetic fields if you go from the bottom to the top. So this very strong and extended magnetosphere that you can see above the black hole polar regions can really, you know, stop matter from infall. That makes this inner disk very thin and actually leaves a lot of holes, makes holes in the accretion disk sometimes. And, you know, another, you know, crucial parameter is always black hole spin in these models, okay? That may even complicate this picture even more, because black hole spin controls the power of this jet as well. And the spin itself, you know, it's not just the magnitude of the spin, but also the direction, yeah? If it's counter-rotating with respect to the falling in plasma, it will basically mess up this whole inner disk. All right, so, but now we have also this EHC data.
Wait, Monica, like, can I ask, like, you know, so on the previous slide, you know, you were just showing, you mentioned that the field strength is a parameter. Why is that not a prediction of the model, you know? The MRI doesn't generate some.
It does, but it's very hard to predict what you will end up with. Yeah, and we also don't know how these magnetic fields are feeding onto the black hole. They may come out, come in from outer regions too. And here we just put them in by hand, and you know we can make them stronger, and then we will end up with a slightly stronger jet. Yeah, it's sort of like a parameter of the model.
Okay. And so the boundary for your simulation is what's shown here, you know, like, you know, this picture.
So on these three plots, I'm just starting simulations with the same magnetic field configuration, but the strength of the magnetic field increases from bottom to top. And then you end up with the stronger magnetosphere. And in these models, you know, a more magnetic field is accumulated like in this polar region. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but great. You can also start with different conditions, and you can just try to pack as much as possible of magnetic fields, and maybe you can even end up with something, you know, even stronger field. Mm-hmm. So this is like it's an initial condition, but it could be also a boundary condition as well.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. Okay, but we have now the EHC data, yeah? And so which models are really preferred by this data? And it turns out that many of those models are consistent with the data, and those that are weakly and strongly magnetized. And it's not because the data have large error bars. So you can see here on this top plot, this is EHC data after a lot of calibration. You can see that, you know, the error bars on them are tiny, okay? The symbols we use to plot them are larger than the error bars. So this consistency and freedom has more to do with the variability of the models. Okay, models are also quite variables. This is something that actually, you know, GRMHC simulations are really great, that they can actually predict also the dynamics of accretion disks. So, you know, the models are variable, and it turns out that you can always find some frames in a model that are, you know, consistent with the data. Okay, so, or at least acceptable given all the uncertainties. So, okay, so what's the next step? How can we discriminate these models of accretion and so on? So the EHT images and data that you saw so far only show total intensity of the emitted by plasma, but synchrotron emission, as you know, is a polarized, it's a non-thermal radiation from non-thermal process. So it's elliptically polarized, generally speaking. So a part of this total intensity, detected electromagnetic wave, electric vector oscillates in some preferred direction that very much depends and is a function of the geometry of the underlying magnetic field that is responsible for this emission. So here we use Stokes parameters to describe polarization of light. This is one of few choices that one can do. For me, Stokes are easy at least to understand. Q and U, you know, that's the linear polarization, and V is the circular polarization. To track polarization in curved spacetime, this vector for all Stokes has to be transported along geodesics. So this transport has to be done, it's a parallel transport, and we do that numerically using numerical codes. There are a few codes like this available. And they are quite accurate. And because we are dealing here with fluid dynamics, numerical integration is preferred. It gives us a freedom, you know, in adapting all these radiative transfer models to different grids and metrics and so on. So just to give you, a feeling how polarized images of black holes shall look like. I like to use this kind of simple example. So here you see linear polarimetric images of analytically prescribed disk around nothing, really. There's no gravity here at all. So for a moment, I just basically took out the black hole away from the center of the grid. It's a completely flat space. And the gray color here, the shade, the gray, is a total intensity. So the disk is brightest, of course, at the inner edge where the disk is the highest. And I thread this disk with magnetic field of different geometry. And the ticks that you see here on these plots are EVPA ticks, so electric vector position angle ticks that tell you about, you know, the direction of electromagnetic wave is oscillating. So if you have toroidal field structures in a disk that are, you know, wind up, then these EVPAs will be radial. And if you thread the disk with a vertical field, then you will end up with something like this. Okay, it's always it's always perpendicular to the field light that is emitting the synchrotron emission. And I think it's kind of easy to understand this pattern. But then now let's drop a black hole in the center of this disk and let's see what gravity does to polarization. So this is shown here. With the black hole in the center. So of course we start to see multiple images of this disk inner edge. We can even see this Lensing ring and this photon ring that is very badly resolved here. It looks like dots, but nevertheless it's there. But the figure shows you basically the effect of what the parallel transport really does to the polarization vector. So EVPA field is slightly deformed by gravity alone. If the black hole is rotating, so here it's non-rotating, but if it's rotating, it's even more distorted, and the effect is called gravitational Faraday rotation. It's actually an interesting effect on its own. But the gravity is not the only thing, of course, as I just said, there's a lot of things around this black holes. We have this plasma. There's more effects that affect this entire Stokes vector. In fact, the evolution of the vector is really complex, and it involves emission, this J factors, and absorption in all Stokes parameters, and all these coefficients are basically all depend on plasma properties, densities, temperatures, velocities, and so on. So each of these coefficients here is a function of many variables, okay? There's also Faraday rotation that interchanges Q and U. So this coefficient rho v capture that. And in hot relativistic plasma around black hole, there's also Faraday conversion effect that converts, U or Q into V. So this is captured by this Q coefficient, rho Q coefficient. So all these effects are important. And in particular, this Faraday rotation can be quite strong. Its magnitude is usually measured via so-called characteristic with this rotation measure. So here, this chi is EVPA actually measured at two different wavelengths. And here you have a difference of a wavelength to the square. And this measure and effect of Faraday rotation is broadly used in astronomy to map, for example, galactic magnetic fields. But in particular, rotation measure is also observed towards Sagittarius A star and M87. And in fact, these two sources are actually the sources, astronomical sources, astrophysical sources that have the highest rotation measure in any astrophysical objects, okay? So we know that Sagittarius A star is polarized and M87 is polarized. There has been detection of linear polarization in these two sources and also rotation measure at the frequency of 230 gigahertz, which is basically the frequency of Event Horizon Telescope. But of course, these early measurements, they are not done with EHT, but as single dish observations, not the entire network. So Sagittarius A star has higher linear polarization and M87 has lower linear polarization, but both of these sources have enormous Faraday rotations, and these Faraday rotations are of the order of 10 to the 5 or more radians per meter square. And this number is really useful to know. Approximately, we also know that rotation measure should be equal to integrated plasma density times magnetic field component parallel to the line of sight. So using some very simple models, one can attempt to estimate, for example, what is the mass accretion rate onto the sources. And this is what has been done in the past, and this is how we know more or less what should be an accretion rate on these two black holes, from observational part. This measurement done a long time ago already, back in 2005, and for M87, already a few years ago, they allow us to more or less put some constraint on mass accretion rate on these two supermassive black holes, and also explain, why these two black holes are actually so dim compared to other AGNs. It seems that they're just underfed. There's simply not much matter around them. And there's one assumption in all these estimates. So, that there is a polarized source, the core near the black hole somewhere, and this Faraday screen where this rotation measure takes place, it's some large distance from the core, okay? But still along the line of sight. So these estimates, they're usually given in these papers just as such, but there are some error bars on them, okay? All right, so finally, as promised, polarimetric view of black hole accretion. So this image shows a black hole in M87, how it should look like in polarized light using just one flavor of this GRMHC simulations. So again, this grayscale that is, behind this image here, this is a total intensity. This is something that you see in orange in all these amazing images. And the ticks on the top is the linear polarization. And we are looking here top down on this weakly magnetized accretion disk as an example. And the ticks, as you see, they're all oriented radially. What does this mean? It means that most of the emission that we see is produced by the toroidal field component that sort of like winds up around the horizon. And of course, these images, they are far from uniform. And also in this case, you maybe can notice that they are very strongly polarized. Here you have the scale of this polarization in fractions. So, yellow region, it's 60% of light is linearly polarized. But here the total, one can also do comparatives already to the observations from 2014, where people have basically measured what is the linear polarization of millimeter light coming from the core of M87 using single dish observations. And they have found actually that M87 is kind of weakly polarized. It's not, 4 or 5% in total, yeah, if you integrate over the image, but it's actually more or less like 1%. Okay, so we have to lower this down, this whole polarization. And actually, we have found a way to do this. So back in 2017, we have written this paper where we have actually found that polarimetric images of M87 or any, black hole, also Sagittarius A star, are super sensitive to this electron-ion coupling in a radio ratio in a disk. So if we have some cool electrons around the black hole, this Faraday rotation increases and depolarizes the image entirely. How this is done? Well, if you have a lot of Faraday rotation, then a lot of this polarization vectors are rotating like crazy, okay? And if they all have random orientations, then if you integrate over them, the polarization will basically decreases to very, very small numbers. But this is actually great, because this means that polarization is a key to discriminate all this model, all these models with the future data. So we can discriminate models of plasma, but there's also, once we do it, there is maybe some hope that we will, after all, at some point, will determine, the spin of the black hole itself.
Can I ask, do you only have measurements at one frequency? Or do you have measurements spanning a range of different channels?
This particular one that I'm referring to from this paper, this is just single frequency. It's exactly 230 gigahertz.
You can't yet, detect the frequency dependence predicted by this explanation for the low polarization?
No, because they have some bandwidth, but it's too small probably to make, any reliable comparison or something like that.
Okay.
But for now we don't have, we have more data for Sagittarius A star actually than for M87, where one can make some more comparisons. Yeah, but here I just wanted to show you that there's such an effect, and polarization is super sensitive to whatever plasma conditions, and it will be way more sensitive, to discriminate the models. One more thing that I would like to say here, that in these models, all Faraday rotation is happening in the source itself. It's not like, you have some polarization, source polarized, and there's some Faraday screen that is, displaced from it spatially. Now, all emission and all Faraday rotation happens in the source here. So this has some implication to all these previous estimates of mass accretion rates, at least to M87, because, this formula has some assumption, like I said, that it assumes that these, the source itself and polarization itself is separated from the Faraday screen. And we actually found and showed that it doesn't have to be the case. This means that perhaps, also there is some error here when we try to, estimate this mass accretion rate. We have to be careful about, these numbers may not be exactly accurate. So apart of linear polarization, that they are made of, the ticks show the linear polarization, we also have the maps of circular polarization. They more or less look like this. So this is a different example using different model. This is actually one of these magnetically arrested flows that has super high resolution. The image itself doesn't have so much resolution. I have to make it better, I have to admit. But in most of the models, circular polarization of in terms of fractions is kind of low, less than 1%. Here in this case, if you integrate it over this entire image, it's almost zero. And this is actually also consistent with observations of M87 previously in 2014. Actually, they have made measurements of circular polarization in a MATE7 at 230 gigahertz, which is the ERC frequency, but it's shown no detection. So, you know, models are still not ruled out by that. What's interesting is the sign of the circular polarization. You know, it reflects the polarity of magnetic field in some of the models, in not all of them, because sometimes, you know, circular polarization is not intrinsic. Sometimes it can be also produced by the conversion process in hot plasma. But, you know, in this case, you can see that we have checked that this actually reflecting the polarity of the field. And there is some organized magnetic field near the black hole not the turbulent one. There is some hope that, you know, we can also use that V to constrain more or less, let's say, viewing angle of the system more precisely. And this is actually quite quite important for Sagittarius A-star, for which we don't know the orientation of the flow at all, right? For M87, M87 is a large jet, so we can more or less, we know more or less what's the viewing angle of the black hole, but in Sagittarius, we don't see any jet yet. So, you know, circular polarization may help us to constrain, you know, the viewing angle. And actually, V, Stokes V, is also useful to detect reconnections of magnetic fields near the horizon. In this picture that I'm showing you, actually, I do see reconnections, or at least I see magnetic field lines that are folding towards the reconnection. Where are they? Well, they're always very close to the horizon. So whatever here you see inside of this lensing ring, this is something that is emitted, you know, very close within ESCO, where these magnetospheres from both sides are squeezing the disk, and the sort of like magnetic fields of opposite polarities are touching each other. So some current sheets are being formed in this model. And actually, for the Stokes V, there's actually really interesting measurements done on Sagittarius A star using, you know, the Atacama large millimeter array. So here you can see light curve in Stokes V, just 3 hours of observations at 230 gigahertz, exactly the same frequency as EHD. And, you know, it's very, ALMA is very powerful telescope, and all these light curves are such a tiny error bars. But what's interesting for Sagittarius A is that the Stokes V and the polarity of the source is always negative. So, you know, it makes you think it's really striking, yeah? Maybe there is some you know, organized magnetic field in the source, yeah? Hopefully we will find out soon. We have to wait for this, I guess. All right, so this is, I think I'm doing great with timing, actually. So yeah, so GRMHD simulations are really powerful tools now for interpretation of event horizon telescope data and also other observations, not just EHC observations, of two largest black holes on the sky. And the first M87 EHC results were very useful for accretion theory, to constrain accretion theory. But, you know, we need something more. And polarization is really particularly promising to constrain not only thermodynamics, but also magnetic fields and what follows also black hole spin. Internal rotation, Faraday rotation may be an issue here. It may modify the polarization maps, it can depolarize. It's, you know, an important part of the story that may, you know, mess up these nice images. And future improvements in terms of theory are very long-term evolution simulations. We can do now simulations to simulate like 15 years of observations of M87, for example. We can really make long-term predictions for the both sources. And the huge cavity still in all the models is, of course, the plasma physics. That is not yet well captured in the simulations. You know, after all, this is all fluid dynamics. Maybe it's not really appropriate for collisionless plasma. There can be also particle acceleration. In my models, I don't have any particle acceleration yet. you know, I assume that all electrons have nice thermal distribution functions, but, you know, they can be in some events like those reconnections or in some other events, particles may accelerate and may change those images. And that is also important because, you know, we see the Sagittarius A star is flaring from time to time, actually every day on average. Maybe it's important to you know, include that. And of course, we also want to model other sources. And from the observational side, actually, there will be more to come. So stay tuned. But I can't say anything really about observations, especially EHD observations. Okay. That's all. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. All right. Yeah, thanks, Monica. So let's all unmute to applaud this great talk. Okay, great. So we have plenty of time for questions. And I see that Eric has raised his hand. So go ahead, Eric. You can unmute yourself.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Monica, for a great talk. So you probably mentioned it, but I didn't catch on it. So the polarization measurements of Sag A stars, what's the near future of this? What's the long-term future? I mean, can you say a bit more about that?
There has been a lot of studies of Sagittarius A star polarization at different wavelengths. And the huge improvement over in the last few years is ALMA. And there's a lot of data available for comparisons, you know, all the light curves, not just for Stokes B, as I showed you, but also, you know, for linear polarization. And of course, you know, EHD data, it has all the Stokes parameters in it. But, you know, there's a lot of new information on this. And hopefully it will get published at some point. When exactly, I'm not sure.
Okay, so... Okay, so
yeah, all VLBI.
You're waiting for the data to be released, and then you'll go crazy with trying to compare it to the simulations. Is that the idea?
I can't say much about EHD data. It's there. Okay. It's there, and yeah, there's some great science ahead of us, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, all other VLBI data of any type, and not just EHD data, they also collect polarization. And, you know, there's the gravity instrument that operates in near infrared wavelengths. So, you know, it also collects polarization data, at least linear polarization. And it will be observing for next years, you know, Sagittarius A star especially. So, you know, we basically expect influx of data not just in radio, in millimeter, but also in infrared. So this will be happening in the next years.
Okay.
And yes, we will go crazy.
Right. Okay, thank you.
So I can ask Ashley something also. So on the previous slide, so you showed how the circular polarization is like always negative.
This one?
No, the next one.
This one, the observational one, yeah.
Yeah, so what was the reason again for that? Like I didn't quite follow.
Yeah, so V tracks the polarity of magnetic fields. So, you know, that means that perhaps, you know, the source has some coherent field that, you know, on average is at the same orientation with respect to us. And, you know, turbulent fields, for example, if they change, if you have turbulence, then, you know, the orientation is random with respect to the observer, and maybe you would start seeing some flips in the Stokes V. So what I'm saying that perhaps this is a signature of some organization in the system. Yeah.
Okay. So you can therefore place limits, you're saying, you know, on the extent of any kind of like small scale turbulence that would decohere.
But, you know, it's a complex system, and it's really difficult to interpret this precisely. You know, models give us some hints. Yeah, we still need to make find a way how to compare these things. Yeah. To models, and this is just a 3 hours light curve. You know, we have to observe the source for longer time to say something
But do the models predict this sort of, you know, coherent fields like everywhere or no?
Yeah, so for example, those models that are magnetically arrested, where you have this huge magnetosphere for on the black hole, then, you know, if you sort of like are, if your line of sight is along the jet, then you see only this vertical fields along your line of sight, right?
I see.
So perhaps this also tells us something about, the viewing angle of the system.
Oh, I see. Yeah, interesting. All right, thank you. Okay, so I see that Avery also has his hand raised.
Right. Hi, Monica. Welcome to Perimeter, even if it's only virtually.
Hi, Avery.
We'll have to get you to visit in person as soon as people can move again.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah.
I would just note to everybody on the call here, Monica's taking a break from the EHT virtual conference, which very fortunately has a break in the middle of the day to come and regale us with tales of polarization. So, double thanks to her for making the time at this particularly busy period. Can I just ask a point of clarification on this curve that you're showing of the Stokes V? Is this is a simulated light curve or is this a measured light curve?
No, that's measurement. That's right. Measurement, Avery. This is ALMA data from cycle 3 or 2, like very early cycle.
Right.
Yeah, I forgot to put a reference here. It's a Bauer et al. 2018.
So this actually extends. It's even more shocking than this because this extends over decades. I don't think, has there been a Stokes V sign flip observed in Sagittarius Star in all the time it's been observed?
I am not aware of sign flips. That's what I'm saying. I think it's always negative. And it's right. Striking to me.
It's not the only blazar, or I'm sorry, Sagittarius Star is not a blazar. It is not the only system for which this is true. People have looked at Stokes V. It's very variable, but the sign is strikingly consistent in a number of AGN. And I said blazars because these are systems for which people can do this. But the origin of that stability is mysterious. It, in the simulations you perform, like 10 years, you said you can do 15 years on M87. 15 years on Sagittarius Star would probably be pretty hard. Do you see polarity flips?
That's very rare. That's what I was actually looking at. And it's sometimes you have the flip, but this is more associated with the fact that you have this lensing ring in which you see something, you know, from the other side of magnetic fields. But overall, you know, there are some fluctuations in these flows, but the whole, if you make a histogram of Stokes V, it's always on the negative side. Most of it, you know, you can make a statistic. So 90% of time, at least for these MAD simulations that I looked at, it's always negative.
I'm going to then triple the kind of bizarreness here in that the MAD simulations are all being fed by this torus that you initially put in. So you were at plus a magnetic field polarity at the boundary. But in Sagittarius Star, I thought presumably it's being fed by this disk of Wolf-Rayet stars or massive stars a little bit outside of where the S stars are that were responsible for the recent Nobel. And these, as that disk orbits around on timescales that I thought were not terribly long, the details of the turbulent feeding on Sagittarius Star should be different. And therefore, it would be easy to imagine that the polarity of the infalling magnetic field, or the polarity of the magnetic field entrained in the infalling gas, is actually fluctuating. So have you done, or are you aware of any numerical simulations in which the disk that's feeding the gas has a net flux, one of these MAD simulations, but the polarity of the net flux that's being applied changes over time?
So, you know, there are those simulations from Sean Ressler that is simulating, you know, the influx of matter all the way from those Wolf-Rayet stars. But I think what they have looked at so far is only the linear polarization, but they haven't looked at the circular polarization yet. But I think there are no such simulations in general. And I am not sure how realistic are the models of their magnetic field injection, you know?
A lot of good science to be done, which is what you said before. That's right.
Yeah, but this is really interesting question. I'm also wondering about this. You know, here in this math simulations, of course, you know, we start with some loops in the torus. This is our initial condition, right? A polarity of this loop is defined by our initial conditions. So you get what you put in. But, you know, if you look at the same model from the other side, so the polarity will be positive, yeah? So, but yeah, I know that here, you know, I'm putting this magnetic field that have some polarity. So, yeah, it's interesting to actually... it would be interesting to know what is the feeding of magnetic fields, yeah, from larger scales. This is also an uncertainty of these models here. We start with some smart guesses, but we don't really know what are the boundary conditions like precisely, right? So, yeah.
Well, thanks again. It's all super exciting.
The only bad thing about V is it's very small magnitude, so it's usually really hard to detect because, you know, Stokes V is always, you know, it goes like 1/10 temperature. So it's always a fraction of linear polarization, and it's usually an order of magnitude lower than a linear polarization. So it's hard to detect it probably if it's so close to zero, you know, to make some measurement. Maybe for Sagittarius A sites, the magnitude is larger. So, yeah.
Okay, any further? Juan has his hand raised. Yes, you can go ahead, Juan.
I have a very naive question. So in the plot, in this, in that plot you just showed, yeah. What is this horizontal axis? Is it time or what?
Here?
Yeah.
It's time, yeah. So this goes, you know, there should be time here. I took out this panel from a plot that had multiple panels. Yeah, it's time, and it's about 3-hour long light curve.
Oh, it's the total time is 3-hour long. Okay.
Yeah, so this whole light curve, you know, it has some gaps always, right? It's not always perfect conditions to observe, but it's like 3-hour long. And, you know, the sources has been observed every spring they observed, yeah? So there's probably more data available from ALMA. So, you know, this is just a piece of some light curve.
So at
maybe some there's given, something, yeah.
So at some given time, there labels with different color, what does that mean?
Oh yeah, so they do this observation at 4 different frequencies that are very close to each other. So it's just a this is band 6 of ALMA has like 4 windows in it. So this just shows you how this Stokes V in Milijansky is measured at 4 different frequencies. I think it's 216 gigahertz, 213, 216, and 227 to 229, or something like that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any further questions? Let me check. I see that Rufus has his hand raised. You want to go ahead?
Yeah, hi. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Rufus.
Hi. Yeah, it's a really like break from the EST conference. follow-up question for this plot. So is there a linear polarization plot at the same time when ALMA observed this thing?
Yeah.
So what does it look like? Is that a kind of correlation between the circular polarization and the linear polarization here?
I will give you a reference. There has been a lot of trials to make some correlations, but I think there's no correlation between V and QU. Definitely they have measured, I'm also co-author in this paper actually. We have measured correlations between linear polarization and rotation measure because here you can estimate it too because you do this at these different frequencies. But I think there was no correlation between linear and circular, which is also interesting to look at, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I can give you, I forgot to put name here to the paper. I can give you the reference to this paper. You can check it out. But yeah, there are some more data here, of course.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're at the hour. So let's stop here. As we can thank Monica once again for a great talk.
Thank you so much. I hope you liked it.